ABC Radio.
And you're joined by Stephanie Carbonyana Kanyandaku this afternoon. When Mark Ronson brings people together, truly incredible things happen. He's one of the great all-rounders of modern music, from DJ to multi-instrumentalist, singer and songwriter to producer extraordinaire. He's also had a hand in unearthing artists and working with some incredible Aussies as well, like Daniel Merriweather, Ella Thompson, Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, and we've just heard Amy Shark is soon to join that list too. But there's one production credit that takes a cake when you look at his incredible body of work and led to the first of his now 7 Grammys. And he's here in Australia with his new album, Late Night Feelings. And we're super excited that he's joining us in the studio right now. Mark Ronson, welcome.
Hey. Sounds so impressive when you tell my life. I love it.
I'm happy to be a drum-up girl at any time coming on stage. Look, a super producer is what we've come to know you as more recently, but you've just played 2 big DJ sets, bringing the pop-up club, Club Heartbreak, I should say, to Australia. And looking at you on stage last night, you seem to be up in your element there as a DJ, which is how you started out.
Yeah.
What's your go-to track to fill a dance floor?
I mean, there's all kinds of things, but Club Heartbreak is really fun because it's like, even though it sounds weird saying it's fun because it's like playing kind of like sad dance music, but there's so much great songs and like all these great pop songs. So that could be something like Miss Jackson by Outkast, which is such a brilliant song and obviously went over well. You forget because it's so uplifting and you sing all the words to it, but that's a song about breakup. That's a song apologizing to the mother of a girl that he couldn't make happy. You think of every Drake song, Robin, Post Malone, Better Now, obviously some of the stuff from my Late Night Feelings record, because that's the theme, that Nothing Breaks Like a Heart with Miley and stuff. So it's fun to play that because like, it just gives everybody this like sense to like let loose and kind of let their feelings out. So Miss Jackson is certainly one of the big ones, like the Club Heartbreak Night for sure.
Well, you were given an interesting nickname by a track and field coach in school. Do you remember?
Yeah, Wrong Way Ronson. How could I forget? I ran the wrong way in the relay race at Sports Day. It's like when my best friend still has the Sublime song Wrong Way as the ringtone when I call him. It introduces me to people 25 years later who like actually call me Wrong Way.
Oh, well, I wondered, given your innumerable collaborations, what specific or odd ways of working have you picked up from other people? Have you ever gone the wrong way in creating a piece of music but still won?
I think that's usually what happens quite a lot. Like, you're trying to emulate something and you sort of get it wrong and hopefully make your own thing. So I feel like, you know, the first thing that I really got to work on that, you know, had this, but just really put me on the map was Back to Black, like you said, with Amy Winehouse. And I didn't know anything about making 60s kind of jukebox girl group pop at the time. She just played it to me and wanted to make something like that. So I feel like us trying to copy that a little bit, like led to this other thing. And I think you're always hoping to like just get it wrong and have something hopefully lovely come out of that.
What has, you know, changed over the years with the way that you've been crafting your music?
It's just like you just hope that you get better each time a little bit. This experience that you pick up from working with these other brilliant people, whether it's Lady Gaga or Queens of the Stone Age or ASAP Rocky, like you bring all these little kernels of wisdom that you hopefully pick up into the next project. So even if stylistically Queens of the Stone Age is not similar to Miley Cyrus, there's an authenticity in all of those acts, and there's like a honesty and a vulnerability, and you try and like learn from that.
You've just put out a new album, Late Night Feelings, which you've described as full of sad bangers. What exactly do you mean by a sad banger?
Sad bangers is like a song that's kind of like emotional, that like still like has a bit of longing and a bit of melancholy, but like the beat and the bass line still slap. So it's like, you know, like I said, all those kind of Club Heartbreak tunes that we're playing, and you know, Old Town Road is a sad banger. You know, he's lamenting this, like, just riding the horse down the Old Town Road. Like, it's such a great thing because it includes so much great music. And so sad bangers is just, it's a song you could dance or cry to depending on whatever you feel like doing at that moment.
What did you listen to when you were creating this album? Think of things from decades gone by.
I just moved to Los Angeles, and so you spend all this time in the car. So I was listening to this a satellite station called Outlaw Country, and I was discovering all this kind of new, really raw, honest, new country, like these two sisters called the Secret Sisters from Alabama that I love. Casey Musgrave's album came out about that same time. So I never really thought I was making this sort of country, you know, female voiced record at the time. But all these things were filtering into my psyche, and just like, I think I was going through a breakup. You crave the honesty and the like emo that's kind of in country music. It's so raw, like at its best. So I was very influenced by that.
Do you think some of the big hits of the 60s would still succeed today if they were released in the same form?
I don't really know. I mean, I think the thing that music in the 60s and what makes music exciting is that it's the music of kids of the generation. Like, I'm even old to be making this kind of music. So teeny boppers and this sort of thing. So like, would the Beatles, if it came out today, or Marvin Gaye belong to the youth of today? I'm not sure. I think like each generation has its own thing. Not to say that those aren't some of the best songs ever recorded, but I don't know.
You're known as really hardworking, quite humble, but an absolute perfectionist as well. What characteristics do you think make a good music producer or maker?
I think there's just like all different kinds. You know, there's every producer has their like, or every great producer has their like toolbox and their things that they do that are special. I think like I've spent way too many late nights in the studio. I think perfectionism is like, it's a little bit of a dangerous term because perfection is really an abstract concept. Like you never really attain it. So you could drive yourself crazy. So I've tried to reframe it as striving for excellence at this point. So I can like, that I can try to, that I know I can do. I can't achieve perfection, but I can try hard to make something that's like of a certain quality.
We're speaking with Mark Ronson live in the studio at the moment. You're joined by Stephanie Kabanyana Kanyandekwe today. What's the closest to perfection you've achieved so far?
I don't know. I realized that some of my workaholic tendencies that have driven me are also things that are probably like maybe nosedive in other parts of my life. So I'm trying to find the balance a little bit, to be honest. But Uptown Funk is one of those songs that certainly, like, we worked so hard on that song within an inch of its life. And Bruno, I mean, if I'm a perfectionist, then Bruno is literally like the gold star general of perfection. So like between the two of us and then Jeff Basker, who co-produced the record, we really wanted to make sure that that song was kind of, you know, foolproof because we loved it and we wanted it to do well, and it was didn't sound like anything else on the radio at the time. So that's the song. I definitely had some hair fall out during the making of that tune.
Well, do you ever get tired of hearing your own songs? I know Uptown Funk, I should say, has been played over a billion times on Spotify and I think about 3 billion views on YouTube. Does it drive you a bit crazy?
Well, they're not all mine, the views, but I do think that like I do think that like what keeps reinventing the song is when you see how like in Instagram, I might be tagged in a video with, like this parents with their 2-year-old dancing to it or playing it at the club last night and just seeing like everybody's reaction to it. And that's the best thing. Like I would never probably listen to it at home, but I love playing it out and like seeing the joy and like how it just makes people happy. So that's cool to have a song that does that.
I certainly was dancing so much I found parts of the sparkles that you released from the ceiling in my shoes.
And that gives you good credit because that means you were there till the end because we didn't release the sparkle to the end. So you really put in your time. Thank you.
Absolutely. It was such a joy to go through that experience. Back to influences and the creating process. Phil Spector famously created what he called the wall of sound as a formula. Do you have one?
I've had like different things that I've gone through in different periods, like where you find sounds that you like, but then I think it's always good to kind of move on and evolve a bit, because if you get pigeonholed in one sound, you know, eventually it will kind of get wear a little thin. So I think the formula, the only thing that I'm really trying to is just to capture a moment in a room that feels a bit magic, gets like some great songwriter, whether it's Lady Gaga or whoever, to let down their guard and give like a rear like glimpse into their soul, like as corny as it sounds. So like I guess the only gimmick is like just trying to get that wonderful like honest moment and said that people will connect with.
Well, you've worked with a stack of people, some of whom you've just mentioned, like Lady Gaga. Anyone on your wish list to come out?
I really get excited by discovering new people, you know. Like, I remember the first time I ever came to Melbourne was because I heard a demo tape of Daniel Merriweather's voice and I, like, got on a plane. I wanted to meet this kid. And, you know, I love that idea on this album. There's, like, Yebba, King Princess, some, like, new artists. Like, they're really, really exciting to me. Diana Gordon as well. So I love that idea of, like, finding the next thing, like, almost more than, like, maybe trying to, like, you know, badger Kendrick into a feature.
Well, there's a through line that I've noticed lately with your last couple of collaborations and some of the artists you just mentioned on this new album. You're working with a lot of women.
Right.
Is that a conscious decision?
Do you know what? I guess that's, you know, when you start working on an album, you kind of like, you try out a bunch of things with different people and then you kind of really see who you click and gel with. And it just happened to be all female artists on this record. I think there was nothing really, I think I was like not really listening to a lot of male dudes. And I think that there's like a vulnerability and an honesty in like the big female artists of this time that I don't really feel in the male ones. Of course, rap is a bit different because Drake and Kanye, like rap is super confessional. But as far as just like the pop singers go, I don't. So I guess I just was working with whoever felt exciting. But it has been a lot of female artists lately for sure.
Well, in the new age of cancel culture, when artists are being zipped out of DJ sets and playlists around the world, have you decided to stop playing artists, not just publicly, but maybe at home as well?
I feel like I have a responsibility publicly, yes, to not play people that potentially could offend somebody in the room or could give somebody some kind of like whatever, just cause any kind of like emotional distress. So yeah, so I definitely, you know, I understand that I have a platform and I need to like be responsible how I use it. I don't judge what other people listen to in their house or whatever. But yeah.
Do you still listen to Michael Jackson? Is he in your playlists?
I'd love to find out what the next question is.
Sure. Well, look, I'm neurodiverse, and one of my types of synesthesia, I've got a few, but one of them has me seeing colours when I hear music.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and vice versa. So I can't help but use it in my composition and my arts practice in general. What does music do to you physically?
It just can be a wave of anything. Like, I don't know, it can, like Stevie Wonder's voice can, like, knock me down like in a second, like a quite emotional, and like there's just so much expression in it. He's definitely my favorite singer ever. I see shapes actually, like snare drums I see as like, I don't know why, like a certain sound, a triangle, when I'm working on a track, there's like these shapes that I see. It's not technically synesthesia, but I definitely associate different instrumentations and parts of the arrangement with different kind of, I guess, geometric patterns, but I haven't ever really thought too much about it.
Well, they're still discovering all the different types of synesthesia. There's over 80, so you might still yet be neurodiverse. We're defining all of these things. How do you translate the world around you or the feelings? I mean, this album is called Late Night Feelings. What's the process in translation for music?
I think it's really like the feeling is like this record has a lot more melancholy than I've really had on other records. And at first it was like a bit strange. It was like, oh, every time I sit at the piano, these kind of quite like, I was happy because it was like soulful, but definitely different kind of melancholy chords. And I was like, I guess I just got to run with it because this is what's naturally happening. So I always just feel that it's like this thing that goes from my brain to my fingertips at a piano. And it's just like you're just kind of, you know, at the first chord, then you're stumbling for that second one. Like it's in your brain, but you're just trying to sort of like hammer it out. So that's how I get the feelings out, you know, I guess, or at least on this record.
Do you think this album is like a natural progression for you, or will future albums return to a more upbeat subject that you're kind of known for?
Hopefully if my life gets better. No, I don't know. I didn't mean it like that, actually. And honestly, like I love this record. It was like to make something that feels a little deeper and meaningful. And if you have to go through something, at least if it can like go into your art or in a way that you can uses some kind of, you know, just growth. I'm not sure what the next record will bring. You know, obviously I've been working with people, so like it's definitely more upbeat when I'm working with Alicia Keys because, like, you know, she's in a wonderful place in her life, so work on her music. I'm not trying to like make her sad as well, but yeah, we'll see. I guess, you know, time will tell.
Your accent is something that confuses a lot of people.
Including myself, believe me. It's like, what is this Kelly Osbourne on Sudafed? What's going on right here?
We're getting a few... Kelly Osbourne on Sudafed. We're getting a few texts through from people asking this question, saying, what is it? It's so lovely. How would you
lovely. Wow, describe? Thank you. Give them my number. What it is I was born in England. My parents are English, and I moved to New York when I was 8. So when you get moved, you want to ditch the old accent. Kids tease you. You're like... Mm-hmm. So then I go, and everyone will be like, why do you sound weird? They would call me commie, even though obviously that makes no sense politically. No. And then I'd go back to England and everyone would be like, why do you sound so American? So I think I just had this kind of like thing. And maybe it's a little bit of a survival mechanism to blend in where you are. And it used to drive me crazy because I'd be speaking to someone and then I'd be suddenly start speaking to an English person. I'd hear my voice actually change and I'd be like, damn it. Like, can't you just pick one voice and just like stay there? But I can't do it anymore, and I stop like bothering myself about it. But I understand some people are just like, what the hell is going on over there?
I think it's the sound of globalization, to be honest. I've got a Rwandan mum and an English dad. And,
okay. You have a lovely voice.
Thank you. And growing up, my first language was French. And now all of a sudden I have an Australian accent from living here. So I think this is just what happens. People move and have different influences.
Yes.
Is language...
You just sound smart, which is good.
Thank you. That's very kind. Is working in different languages something that you might do with your music?
Let me think. So I have worked with some French. I've definitely worked with some French artists, with some French rappers, and Amadou and Mariam. I love international music because I feel like I've kind of heard every English song now at this point, or like even going back, of course there's some rare 60s whatever psychedelia I've never heard, but I love like finding like, you know, rare Ethiopian or Mozambique like funk records because it's just like this beautiful music you've never heard, and you know, French, all of it. So yeah, I would definitely be interested in doing stuff in other languages, like as long as you get the feeling, it doesn't matter what language.
Well, the hot question for lots of people right now is, what are you listening to during your downtime in between interviews and while you're traveling? What's on your playlist?
That's such a good question, and I completely can't answer right now because I blank whenever anybody asks me that. But what have I been listening to? I'm an idiot. I can't think of anything right now. I've just been kind of reading a bit because I probably end up getting a little bit burnt out on music by the time like I need to rest my ears for a bit.
Well, what are you reading?
I'm reading like these, like all these books that my therapist recommended that just have the most embarrassing names. I can't even tell you because they're like self-help, like love books. So it's like they have literally no joke. There's one called Hold Me Tight. I'm so glad it's a Kindle, so I'm not on the plane and no one can actually see what I'm reading because it would be terribly embarrassing.
Wow. So it's the
but no joke, Hold Me Tight's actually a pretty tight book.
So The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle might be in
I need
the
to
list.
Get in that. Some Pema Chodra. I like combining the kind of Eastern philosophy books a bit more like kind of, you know, spiritual with the kind of more like, I guess, the Western, like shrinky, fix your heart books.
Well, we've just been celebrating NAIDOC Week here in Australia, and there are a lot of amazing Indigenous authors out there. So I'm sure we can send you home
Please.
With a stack of books if you want to connect up. Mark Ronson, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for talking to me. Thank you.